Okay, so I am Diego Rodriguez, and I'm very happy to be here. So I'm going to focus my talk today on the kind of point where products and ecosystems meet design and business. So that's my point of view. And you got to ask at the start of this, why ecosystems? Why are we even talking about this concept in the context of design? And for me, it all comes down to great experiences. And how are you going to design a great experience? I think a lot of you have probably been to the Monterey Bay Aquarium. If you haven't been there, I really recommend you go. For me, going to the jellyfish tank is like an almost transcendent experience. They're beautiful. You almost can have an out-of-body experience, and it's really magical. And I think traditionally, design has focused on this window. We would have worried about, you know, like, what color should we make the glass? Should it be a lozenge, or should it be a rectangle? And the engineers would be thinking about how thick to make it, et cetera, et cetera. And that's all fine, and that's extremely important for a lot of reasons. But when you start thinking about ecosystems, you start to think about, you know, what's really the experience that a visitor is going to have at this place? And how can we make it as good as possible? So you start to think about, well, what is it like to arrive at the aquarium? Is it a pain? Or is there a bus you can take there? Is it easy to walk to? Where do these people stay? Where do they eat? You know, what's the economic relationship of the museum to the surrounding Monterey community and even to the surrounding state, let alone really basic stuff like how did they get those jellyfish there in the first place? And how do they keep them alive? I'd like to know that. So what I want to argue today, or not argue, but discuss, perhaps, is the idea that great experiences demand great ecosystem fit. And so what we as designers really need to be thinking about is not just the object, not just that window at Monterey, but the whole system surrounding it. And the more we can design the whole system or help others think about designing it, the better fit we'll get to that ecosystem and the better the experience will be. So what I'd like to do is kind of walk you through three facets of what happens in my head as I go through my life doing design thinking. And hopefully we'll be able to knit together some kind of narrative across these that says something about good ecosystem design. So the first thing I would like to talk about is my somewhat irrational, abiding, and as my friends like to say, almost freakish love of cars. And I really, really love cars, you know, not just because of the mechanical part of it or the aesthetics, but because I think there's a lot to be learned about ecosystem design when you think about the automobile world. You know, from an aesthetic viewpoint, it's all there. So traditional design is so important when it comes to cars. And this is a hinge detail off of a pre-war BMW Mille racer, and I could stare at this all day, and I have been known to. Or, you know, like a mid-60s Ferrari racer, like that air intake is just gorgeous, and the gas cap makes me want to weep. I love it all. Not to say that beauty is everything. I'm really, really interested in ugly cars. And all things being equal, I'd rather be interesting than beautiful. And then there's also the technical aspect of this stuff. And it's really important, right? Things can't just be beautiful, they've got to work. So we've got to consider, as Alan was saying, you know, what's happening behind the scenes? What are the technical processes that are going into this? And what's happening in the ecosystem there? And again, if you look at the world of automobiles, mankind has spent so much energy finding ways to mix gas and air and then explode it. And, you know, as a kind of car geek, I love looking back on this and just recognizing the enormous ingenuity that's gone into all these different systems. And then this third sphere that makes cars so interesting to me, and it's what I write about a lot on my blog. And my blog is not a car blog. It's a blog about innovation and design. But cars are something that we all pretty much understand or are familiar with, even if we hate them. But there's so much money is spent on manufacturing, delivering, marketing, and servicing cars. So it's a huge business, as you're well aware of. And so questions of viability really come into play. And when these things are well designed, like with the Mini brand, it works. When they're not well designed, I don't know what brand I'll harsh on. I won't harsh on any brands. When it's not well designed, then you have a lousy experience. So what I'm really talking about are these three spheres. I think when you're talking about designing for ecosystems, you've got to consider desirability, which is kind of that top left bubble, which are things that designers have always thought about, aesthetics, usability, functionality. But you've also got to be considering feasibility, which is a lot of technical factors. Will it work? Will it fall out of the sky? And I think the big product design movement of the 80s and 90s was about combining those two things. And the third sphere there is the one that I don't think gets considered enough, which is how are you going to make this into a viable business? And that's really important. So to be clear, this is not the ecosystem, but I think these are the factors that let you kind of go out and find the ecosystem that you need to design for. So more on this later. I think when you're doing design thinking, you're considering all three of these, but primarily you're always staying rooted in the first one of desirability, because we need to be human-centric in our approach and create value for real human beings rather than optimizing for the other two. So that's enough about cars. The second thing I'd like to talk about is a really interesting startup that I've had the great fortune to be associated with over the past couple of years. And it's a Silicon Valley startup, but it's not a business, it's a school. And it's called the Hasso Plattner Institute of Design at Stanford. And we like to call it the D School because it's easier to say and remember, and also because it puts us in a position of delightful animosity with business schools all over the world. And at the D School, as opposed to in a B School, what we teach is something we like to call design thinking. And you know, most, I would say all of us have been trained in the Western educational system to be really good at analytic thinking. And there's nothing wrong with analytic thinking. I do it all the time, or most of the time. But design thinking is this wonderful thing you can add on top of it. And most of you here are already doing it, so I'm kind of preaching to the choir. But I want to talk through what I think design thinking is, because I think understanding it helps you design better fit for the ecosystem again. And so I think the fundamental aspect of design thinking, what we're teaching at the D School, is optimism. You've got, in order to go out and solve big problems in the world, I think you've got to be optimistic that you can start and that you can solve them. Otherwise, you know, why get out of bed in the morning? But there's a few more components to it. And I like this picture a lot because I think it kind of delivers in a crisp way what these other components are. I think the most important one is kind of depicted on the far side of the screen, is the sense of mind of the child. When you're doing design thinking, you're innately curious, you're always open to new experiences, and you're willing to get out in the world and discover things, you know, like a little kid will. But what designer thinkers do is balance it with what I like to call an attitude of wisdom, which is typified by the other gentleman on the page. And you know, what wise people do is they learn from their mistakes and they listen to what the world is telling them. And when they're successful, they listen to that too, and they steal from what other people are doing when things are working well and not working well. And I think, you know, our national state of affairs might be a little bit better if people were actually acting from an attitude of wisdom. But the point is, if you combine those two, and if you're kind of innately curious, but also willing to listen to what the world is telling you, that puts you in a great position to start building things. And what I think a lot of what design thinking boils down to, so in addition to optimism, mind of the child, and this attitude of wisdom, is the sense of building the think, of building a lot of prototypes and letting the world tell you what's going on. So that's what we try and stress at the D School. And what we do is we take these people who have this intense analytic background, they're all master's students, and then we add on what we like to call design thinking, which is this broader sensibility. And what that does is it turns them into what we like to call a T-shaped person. And I want to say that I think a T-shaped person is what we all are in this room, and it's the right kind of background to have when you're going after big, foggy, gnarly problems. In other words, when you have to deal with entire ecosystems in order to get something done. And at the D School, that's actually what we do. So it's not kind of like a typical school environment where we give fake assignments and they have no ramifications in the world. What we actually do is we set up students in teams and have them go work on real problems. And those teams are set up the way they are in the real world as well. So let's say this person is from a business school, and we have a lot of people from business schools at the D School. And what we'll do is we'll pair them up with somebody like from the engineering school and then somebody from maybe the medical school. And they're all representing each of those disciplines. And then each of those other people also brings a design thinking sensibility. And that design thinking is the glue that lets them all work together and get something big done. And what happens at the D School is really interesting. And I'm going to show you some project outcomes so you can get a better sense for what I'm talking about. But the students love it because it's one of the first times in their career where they are the one responsible for representing their entire discipline. Usually when you go through school, you kind of know, you know, there's always somebody smarter than you in the class, and if you get stuck on a team with them, you kind of have to go with whatever they say, especially if you're in a business school. They all argue whoever, you know, who's going to be the CEO of whatever the project is about. So anyway, what happens on these teams is they all have to represent their own discipline, and it's a transformational experience for a lot of them because this is the first time they have to stand up and say, I believe this, and then live with the results. And it's a big deal. And it's going really well so far. The president of the university, President Hennessy, refers to the D-School as a gem, which is good for us as a startup. So I've spent the last 3 months teaching a class about design thinking and the design of ecosystems called Creating Infectious Action. Imagine this class as Seth Godin's Purple Cow meets his other book, All Marketers Are Liars. So on the one hand, it's about designing remarkable stuff, but it's also designing the system to spread those remarkable things. And we practice what we preach, so we actually call it CIA to make it a little bit more infectious and catchy. But the class is mostly about action. And one of the big assignments we had the students do was to work with Mozilla. And for those of you who don't know, Mozilla is the maker of Firefox, which is a fantastic open source web browser. But you know, Firefox has this kind of prototypical marketing problem where every web savvy blogging geek in North America, and to some extent the whole Western world, has already adopted Firefox. So what do you do to cross the chasm and get the big, wide stretches of middle America to start using your browser? It is a thorny marketing problem because this product is markedly better than any alternative. It's better designed, it works better, it's safer, and it's free. So why wouldn't people use it? And that's exactly the problem that the people at Mozilla are really struggling with, and that's what we assigned to our students. So what we did was we put them into groups of four people, again, these multidisciplinary teams, and said, you have 2 weeks to go out in the world and use a human-centric design process. We need you to understand and observe and find out why people who don't use Firefox don't use it. And then you need to come back with a solution. And not just a proposal like in a PowerPoint deck like this, but something actually working. Because we have this bias towards action because design is about making changes in the world. And so their big client was this guy, Asa Dotzler, who I think is a genius. And he's the guy who invented the open source approach to marketing. And he's not a programmer, but he works at Firefox. And the numbers he tells me are pretty remarkable. They have 60 people on staff. They have 120,000 people doing free marketing for them around the world. And they have 60 million users. And so those are pretty good ratios for any business to have, let alone a nonprofit. And so he was the sponsor, and he had to evaluate all these projects. And the teams did a really good job of designing for the ecosystem. And I'm going to show you two examples. The first one is a group that spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to infect a single population with a very specific worldview. And they had to really consider the ecosystem. So this team came up with an offering called Faith Browser. And if you know a little bit about Firefox, it's very modular, so it's easy to add on modules to it. So what this team decided to do was to change the offering to make it better for people using it within this population, but then also think quite consciously about how to design a system to spread it. And so what you need to do is just look at the upper left-hand corner, and there's the home button and kind of the recycle, refresh your screen button. And so there's two things that happen with Faith Browser. First of all, those get changed to be a church and a halo. And this wasn't like a cynical design effort. They spent a lot of time with people from the local Christian community around Stanford. And people actually loved these graphics. It made them feel good about using the browser. And then the other thing it does is each time you open up the browser, it queries an online Bible database, and it pulls down a piece of scripture in the form of a quotation, the top. So these are kind of small changes, but for people who don't really know what a browser is and think it's just Google, this is a really cool thing, and it gives them a little bit of grace or joy in their daily experience that they otherwise wouldn't get, and it's enough to tip them over to switching, which is the key part of the challenge. But this isn't all of it. So they actually designed the marketing program to spread it, and it isn't about just designing for the end user. It's not like the window at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. They identified in the ecosystem that there are some really connected mavens, to use Tipping Point speech, in the evangelical Christian community. And those people are pastors. You know, they speak to an audience like this from a lectern, and they can say, I want you to go home tonight and download Firefox and install Faith Browser because it'll make your life better. And so far, it seems to be working. It's slowly, but it's gaining a lot of traction. So that's an interesting example of ecosystem design. The other team I'm going to show you kind of took a different approach. I think it's much more of a San Francisco-ish approach. They concentrated heavily on aesthetics, if by aesthetics you mean sex. So this team developed a site called Firefoxies. And what Firefoxies is basically you upload your photo, and it's attracting thousands of models via ads they placed in Craigslist, and then people vote on who's most foxy. In order to vote, you have to download Firefox. And this one has been working really, really, really well, as you might expect. And in fact, it actually spread Firefox. They keep a track of the top 250 download sites. And this one hit number 8, which is really remarkable. Remember, this is a 2-week student project. None of these people knew how to program anything, and they had like 3 or 4 other classes going at the same time, each of which is equivalent to a full-time job. And if you look at number 1 on the list is Craigslist. So they're in very, very good company. So, you know, I think about Firefoxies, and again, I think about, so what's going on from an ecosystem design? And what's happening here is these students looked out into the ecosystem of Firefox, and they said, aha, this is an open source community. There are people who develop this product for free on their own time because they're intrinsically motivated to do so. So their response was, how can we tap into that? They went out into the community and asked for help with graphic design and programming with the promise that they knew people at Mozilla, and if this flew, then people's careers could progress, and that's exactly what's happened. The other thing they did, which is the big design thinking component of it, is over the course of the class, they continue to revise the site, and it's gone through something like 12 revisions to date because they keep learning with that attitude of wisdom about what works and what doesn't work. So, you know, the people at Mozilla are incredibly happy about it. They think that they've really raised the bar on what Mozilla can do, which is pretty remarkable considering the numbers that I told you. And I think there's a bigger lesson about designing ecosystems from a business point of view, and it's this, that I think most organizations, when they have to bring something new to market, let's say you're in the business of, you know, building elephants, just for the sake of argument, most people, when they have to build something new for the market, they say, aha, let's just launch a smaller elephant. And let's hope that it kind of takes hold and that it grows and then it thrives. And when the elephant doesn't thrive, people say, you know, innovation is really tough and 95% of innovation efforts fail, so it really wasn't our fault. But I'd say it is your fault. And instead of developing an elephant, which, by the way, has a gestational period of 23 months and is a really complex organism, and which is unable to adapt to stimuli in its environment quickly enough for it to change and survive, I think what we really need to be designing are fruit flies. And fruit flies are something that get born in a day and live for a few days and mutate really rapidly. And when we think about designing things, this is exactly what the Firefoxies people did. They didn't launch a mega site or an elephant. They made a little fruit fly, and they let it evolve. So this takes me to the last part of what I'm going to talk about, which is my daily work at IDEO. So this is my day job. And at IDEO, I spent a lot of time thinking about business and design and how to use design thinking to drive strategy. And it all comes down to the sense of it is about the ecosystem. And what I end up dealing a lot with my clients is having clients come to a realization, as one told me recently, that, you know, you guys showed us through this human-centric design process that we used to think we were at the center of the solar system. We realize we're a big player in the ecosystem. And that's a huge difference when you talk about generating a 10-year strategy. And specifically, I think that what we all need to be doing in order to design better fit for ecosystems is to do a better job of designing for business. And I really mean this. If you're not designing for business as a designer, I'd argue what you're doing is art. Because design is about making money. And that may seem a little crass, but it's about creating value in the world. And if you don't capture some of the value, you're not helping yourself or your family or your coworkers or your company or your society. And so you've got to design for business. And I think this is one of the most important movements in the world of design today. And so if you aren't kind of in this mode, I'd urge you to think about joining the movement. And I use the word movement quite consciously because I do think it's a thing about hearts and minds. And I use the word movement so much that somebody at IDEO, you know, kind of decided to poke fun of me and made this graphic. But so anyway, enough about movements. So here's how I approach designing for ecosystems as a design professional. I think the first thing is to ensure desirability for users. It's what we've always done as designers. That means, you know, at IDEO, we do a lot of work for P&G. We've developed this great thing called Carpet Flick, which is a really disruptive offering relative to electric vacuum cleaners. I love it. Honda is a master of delighting users. They always reinvent the category, even with this new Ridgeline pickup. They just went back and said, what do people really need? The second step is balancing desirability across stakeholders. So this is where things change, and this is where you start designing not just for the end user, but for the entire ecosystem. Netflix is a master of this. Now, Netflix could have said, if we need to get DVDs to somebody's house, we'll design our own proprietary delivery system and have people in red trucks pull up and throw DVDs in your front yard. But they realized by working with the post office, they could create value for the post office, they'll make more money, and Netflix could provide a really superior customer experience. And there's that word again. Amazon's another great example of that. Amazon makes it easy for someone like me, a blogger, who tends to blog on Saturday nights sitting in my underwear, to sell books off of my blog. And they did it really easily. A couple clicks, and you become a storefront for Amazon. Why? Because they said it's not just about us, it's about everybody else in our business ecosystem. By considering everybody else, we can grow the pie for everybody. And this really is the point where design becomes much more of a negotiation. That's about creating a non-zero-sum game for everyone and growing the pie, rather than saying it's all about me. Finally, it's the sense of fruit flies, not elephants. So put stuff out in the world, because ecosystems are complex. You've got to put something out and build the think in order to figure out what's really going to work with the ecosystem. Apple's been a great example of this. I don't think when they launched the iPod that they knew they were going to come up with the Nano. But looking back on their history, you can see that ability to put something out and learn from it and quickly roll it into a new offering. And Google is the master of this. They have a whole page on their website dedicated to their collection of fruit flies called Google Labs. And they're really remarkable in their ability to do that. So just to wrap up, it's about these three factors, these three steps: ensure desirability, balance that desirability across the ecosystem stakeholders, and then iterate quickly with fruit flies. Always considering these three bubbles of desirability, feasibility, and viability, and that's the way to get to great experiences. Thank you very much.